You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. From building referral ecosystems and creating authority content to learning from the deals that got away, this is where brokers get the tools to grow their pipeline, elevate their brand, and win the listings that matter most. Time for business broker growth.
On this episode, I have Gregory Kofsky. He is the president and CEO of IBA, the Pacific Northwest leading business brokerage and M&A firm. Gregory, welcome to the Business Broker Show.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
I am super excited for you to be here. And the audience is going to find out as we have this conversation and go through it. Just to give people a little bit of background on you, is you started in the M&A industry over 30 years ago, worked for IBA as a broker. After 6 years of being a top performer there, ended up purchasing IBA from the founder, and you've been running it ever since. You guys now have, 10 offices in Washington and Oregon, and over the company's 50-year history, I believe it's somewhere around 4,400 transactions. Gregory is also a published author, seminar speaker, advocate for entrepreneurship. His expertise spans basically everything you would think of for small and medium businesses. He's constantly speaking and sharing knowledge. And I'm so glad that you're here because you're really the catalyst for the business broker growth business and for this podcast. Did you know that?
I did not know that, but I'm honored. I mean, as you know, you've been a sales development guru for my team over multiple years, having worked on site during annual offsite events where we focus on training, education, skill development.
Yeah, it's been a fun relationship. So it all started in 2020, which I think is a fun kind of look back. Early pandemic, connected with you on LinkedIn. I was going through kind of a focus at the time where I thought, you know what, the good people for me to connect with would be business brokers, because as you're potentially helping a business exit, they might want to help their revenue side and improve their revenue side so they can sell it for more. So I thought, hey, let me meet lots of business brokers because they should refer me in to their clients, which didn't happen and isn't actually a good referral source because businesses don't actually think that way or owners don't think that way. But it led to us connecting, which then led for you being a guest on my original show, my original podcast. At the time, it was the Authentic Persuasion Show. You, in 2020, it was episode 325 of the podcast already at that point, like a year into the podcast. And here you are, this is episode number one of the Business Broker Growth Show. And because of how influential you have been in my life and helping me focus on business brokers, you know, it had to be the number one conversation for the show. Does it feel like we've been connected for 5+ years?
Yeah. You feel like you've been a friend and a resource for much longer. And as we're probably going to cover and talk, business brokerage is one of the most sophisticated, nuanced, big ticket sales items you can engage with. They are at the same time an investment and a piece of art, because each business is unique to itself with no direct comparable. The most cookie cutter franchise in a different location has different labor rates, different occupancy rates, different tax rates potentially. So even the most standardized franchised restaurant that we all go to has different issues by location, which makes it unique.
Yeah, it is interesting if you think about that, right? So one pest control company in one area versus another, totally different industries, different business. It doesn't matter to what, you know, let's say a broker's background, what business they were in before, that's helpful. But where do you see that as a valuable necessity, but also kind of not enough on your end?
Well, that's where I believe local knowledge and experience are critical to success in this business. An easy example, IBA's first office was in Portland, Oregon, the Rose City. And the Portland metropolitan area includes Oregon and Washington when you cross the Columbia River into Vancouver. Well, Oregon has a state income tax. Washington does not have a state income tax. So the same business doing the same revenue, let's say even the same profitability, will have different net income to ownership after taxes, which, if we lean into the investment side, would result in different valuations based on what people take home. And literally, these businesses could be separated by a bridge in a mile and a half.
Yep. And understanding that, understanding the sales tax, right? One state has it, one state doesn't, and how that affects it. So for you, you're saying, you know, the local awareness, the local understanding, does that trump the business experience hand in hand?
I think they go together in collaboration. There are definitely elements of knowledge that you need wherever you do it. Again, into the sophistication of this business, a quality top-tier business broker needs to have accounting, tax, finance, legal, real estate, business, and then sales psychology knowledge in order to advance the transaction forward, because on a given day, you are not going to know what the critical issue is to a transaction. It could be a non-compete issue where a child of an owner wanting to sell and retire doesn't want to work for new ownership, wants to set up their own similar business, and does that non-competition situation damage the value of the business being sold? Because there's a direct threat from someone who knows everything about the business, where in another situation, it could be customer concentration and the ability to get a buyer and a bank comfortable with the fact that 30% of revenue comes from one customer. And if that customer is not retained, then profitability and debt service become problematic. So that's where knowledge and experience are so important, and having that local thread where you're not applying something that's true in one case versus another case. I mean, we're in the autumn right now. We're dealing with rain and flooding issues in certain parts of the world. I mean, you're in Florida. If a hurricane comes through, well, that property in a 10-year floodplain versus a 50-year floodplain should have different values or different considerations. And just like businesses in different locations should have different considerations.
And so going into another part that I know is huge with IBA, with all the brokers that are a part of your team, which is the, you know, properly valuing a business, the valuation process that you guys pride yourself on, and then listing a property or a business for sale. Like, why is that so important from your side? And why do you think that really separates the professional, very effective brokers from the rest?
Wonderful question. So let's start on the buyer side. Every buyer is going to be asked to value the business. They won't make an offer without a valuation. They may enlist a CPA or a business appraiser or some other expert to support them. But on the buyer side, it takes two to reach agreement and sell a business, recognize that the buyer is going to have to value the business. So as a professional salesperson, you need to establish a value that you can justify. And in the sale of a business, we actually have to sell a business four times. The first time is to the buyer. And the buyer is the easy one. They have emotion. They're excited about this acquisition. They can see themselves driving this Porsche down the road. The next one we got to sell is their CPA or CFO. Well, they generally are not emotional. I mean, think of your mental image of an accountant. It's probably not a emotional charged person. It may be someone with the classic green visor working with a calculator with a tape being created. But that is the second sale. The third sale is the attorney, and attorneys tend to be afraid of their own shadows. They sell fear. So they're not looking necessarily at the value in terms of dollars, they are looking at it in terms of liability and risk. What are the exposure points, the Achilles heel that could end up in a negative situation? And then the final party you got to sell, and the old axiom is he who has the gold makes the rules, is you've got to sell it to a bank or investors, because if they're not bringing their deliverable to closing, you're probably not completing the transaction. So all four of those parties need to be sold. So that's where I believe entering with a vetted business where you've looked at it from 360 degrees and can justify the value, it's critical. And recognize that 10 people, all with similar experience and knowledge, could value the same business and come up with 10 different values. And to each of them, it's going to be a correct value. There may be some plus or minus variation. Our job as a broker is to get parties to yes and shake hands. So it doesn't happen instantly. And as you know so well as a sales expert, different messaging, different arguments impact resonance with the party, no matter if you're selling fruit, a house, or a business.
Yeah, I love that. So to recap, I think what's so important is that for the salesperson, which is the business broker, they've got to establish value. And then, like you said, is be able to justify it, not just putting a value, not just putting a listing out there, but justify it. And if you justify it and cover all the bases and can explain all the logic that went into it, it's tough to fight the logic in the numbers that went into it. It's just not a dart on a dartboard kind of figure. It's a actual, you know, calculation-based figure. It's not a number that the business owner made up because that's what they want to exit for. There's a reason for it. And I think that's important. And then you said there's four sales that need to be done, which are also four hurdles, which is why there's sales effort and persuasion that needs to occur to overcome those hurdles, which is the buyer, the CPA or CFO, the attorney, and then whoever's got the gold, the bank, the investor. And I think that's important because I see a lot of brokers who they just get listings and they put that listing out there. It's great. If they just go with the number that the owner wants to list it for, then hopefully that'll work out. And then they play a numbers game. I know one thing you told me is that people will marry the number you list the business at, you know, and the dollar amount. And where does that get brokers in trouble if they're not careful with their valuation?
It's a big problem. It's you either need to persuade and do the heavy lifting at the front or in the negotiations. The seller is open for education at the beginning. Obviously, they want the highest value possible, but that's where you intertwine the end in sight. If you work with a local or national SBA lender, they can go up to $7 million approximately in financing with different tools like Paracasu, et cetera. If you've talked to them and they say, we need at minimum a 1.35 debt service coverage ratio for this loan, you can do the math. You can educate your client. So let's say a business is earning an owner $1 million for a round number. And let's say ownership's labor running the company is worth $250,000. And that's needed to cover their mortgage, their kids in school, et cetera. You have $750,000 left. Well, that $750,000 needs to cover the debt service on that business. In the bank, when I talk about a debt service coverage ratio, wants to have a margin of error that if inflation happens, if expenses increase, if they lose a key customer, and that's where between a 15% premium over your monthly payment of principal and interest to a 35% premium is pretty standard in the market. So you can do the math at X sale price. If a buyer puts in the traditional 10 to 20% down and seeks an SBA loan for the balance, can you clear that hurdle? Can you get a lender to deliver the money necessary? Because if you can't, in a perfect world, let's say with 10% down, you may be able to get your client close to cash for the business if the debt service coverage is appropriate. If you can't get a lender, then maybe the seller's asked to finance 70-80% of the deal. And does the seller want to take that risk, especially if they're retiring, of betting on someone who's never run this specific business again, who they met yesterday?
Not usually, I would guess. And I feel like it's those kind of factors when not set up properly that leads to a lot of business listings not selling.
They do. I mean, nationally, I hear numbers that 15 to 20% of businesses put on the market sell. And I believe slice of those that do not sell are either overpriced, where there's unrealistic values. They are for sale by owner or by inadequately skilled brokers who fumble the ball and aren't able to move it forward. Or they're failing business models that someone hopes someone will buy their idea where they are gonna, you know, sell key lime pies and have grandma's recipe and build out a key lime pie store. And then they realize they're busy, but they're busy from 4 to 9 at night. And other than that, they're paying for rent and staffing, where not many people come in the morning and say, hey, can I buy a pie?
Right. So I know we're going to talk about growth strategies next. We're going to get into the rapid fire segment. One of the things I know, so it's at odds. Let me take a step back. It's at odds. I want your ideas for what you see successful brokers do to grow their business. I know that you're big on referrals and referral partners and things like that. I also know that one of the things that makes you and IBA brokers successful, especially at the rate that you guys sell, right? I believe it's somewhere between 80 and 90% of your engagements sell versus, you know, what the national industry averages. And I've heard the same thing, 15 to 20% actually sell. So 80% don't. But you guys still pass on maybe more deals than you take on or more engagements than you take on. And so how does a broker balance that kind of in their mind, right? They want more listings, but it's, you know, quality over quantity.
Well, I think you've got to have abundance mentality, and you are correct. We pass on 2 out of 3 opportunities that come to us. And the 3 reasons are, A, they're unrealistic in value. And if we're not going to complete a sale as 100% paid on performance firm, why start? I would rather go for a walk with my wife and 2 dogs than work on a project that's not going to sell. The right. Second is if you don't trust the person, it's going to be a close short-term relationship, and you should pick your clients to make sure you dovetail and have an alignment of goals. And then the third reason is if you don't believe in the business model. I was just reading the Wall Street Journal, and they had an article how TiVo is stopping production of their products. Well, I can tell you, I bought a TiVo when my wife was pregnant with our first child, and it was a godsend. It was the most wonderful thing, is that she could record shows, and if she had morning sickness or had a baby crying or whatever it is, she could pause her show she was watching and come back to it 45 minutes later and not be dependent on the schedule like we were growing up. If you wanted to see, you know, Fonzie jump cars or who shot JR, you needed to be tuned in when that was on or you missed it.
That's it.
TiVo was a game changer in the creation of that, but it's no longer a needed product. And it's day in the sun has passed, and you need to look at business models and as a buyer and think, what is the 3, 5, 10 year horizon for this company? Because any investment, and I went to the University of Texas McComb School of Business, my degrees in finance, and buying any investment, you need to think with the exit strategy. Because if you buy a business and you get the annuity of income over it, but your exit value is 0, that changes the dynamics of the investment. That may still, at the right price, you may be fine with a 5-year horizon of an annuity of owning. And it's in a building that you know is going to be torn down in 5 years. There may still be a market for that business, but it's different than one that knows they can remain there for the next 20 years.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business. And now back to the episode.
Yeah. Makes sense. I also remember when TiVo came out. I remember how big it was because you no longer had to schedule your life around TV, watching sports. I remember that game. It changed my life for basketball because I no longer had to plan my life around being available to watch basketball. I could just record it and then watch it whenever. So, but it is interesting to think about, you know, models go away. And then if you're trying to list that business, is anyone going to want to buy something that might not have a future or could obviously be replaced or, you know, made non-functional, unnecessary? So I think that's important. I like all of those reasons why you would pass. And then, you know, the part that you said in the beginning was the abundance mentality, where, you know, if you trust that there's enough businesses, you'll find the right ones. You don't have to work with the wrong ones. Especially, like you said, it's any broker watching this already knows this, but it's a relationship, right? And you have to trust that person. They also have to deliver what you need them to deliver. And, you know, if they're not doing their part in the beginning, you're just going to be chasing them and forcing it, right?
And what's your opportunity cost of taking a listing that you don't sell, but you still need to spend time on versus the business development and projects behind door number two that you could be working on? I think as a salesperson, we want to pursue every lead, but the best salesmen pick their projects.
Yeah. I think that's so important. It's so vital for people to understand. And I think, you know, there's times where maybe a new broker's taking more things and then they realize which ones they really like to do or which people they really like to do. Some of that's just a learning process more than just accepting everything and throwing it against the wall. So it's that evolution. So, and I think there's a good segue into the next part, which is the rapid fire. It's the broker growth playbook. Obviously, you've been doing this for over 30 years. You've been running IBA for a long time. You've grown it where you have a lot of brokers, I'm say a lot, across a couple of states, doing a lot of transactions, like I said in the intro. And so you know a thing or two about growing a business, growing a pipeline as a business broker and being successful. So what I would love is to hear your tips. I know that you've got some on deck. I know that you're ready with those. I also know from your abundance mentality and everything that we've done together that you're happy to share things with everybody, just like I am. So what's the first one on your list? I won't say number one, but what's the first one on your list of, you know, ways a broker can grow?
Well, an IBA has a collaborative corporate culture. I, in general, want business brokers to be successful and deliver quality representation throughout the industry. I don't think it's good for the industry to have used car salesmen and people fail. And for IBA as a sell-side firm, the only time we're competing with others is if they're interviewing a couple different brokers to select the one for the project. And I put the burden on us to tell people, why IBA? Why me? Why should I be your business broker? And if we fail, we should look in the mirror if it goes to someone else. Now, they could have offered an inflated price like we covered earlier, and that may be acceptable reason to lose. My managing broker for Oregon, Stephen Cohn, was selling a 3-location chain of Little Gym franchises, and he was interviewing me and other brokers to do that project, and I didn't give him the highest price. He came back to me and said, I want to hire you, but I want you to match the list price this other broker indicated they could deliver. And I looked him in the eye and said, I know that broker. He may know things I don't. I'm uncomfortable with that price. You should go with them. He went with them, came back to me multiple months later, said, I have no offers. I'm ready to listen. We ended up listing the business, selling it, and he ended up joining me about a decade ago and has been my broker of the year and Achieve, because knowledge, experience, and skill matter. And he recognized that all brokers are not the same. So yeah. Let's go into your elements here to be successful. The first one, and interrupt me if you want to go deeper, but the first one I would say is it's easy to ramp up marketing. You can pay for pay-per-click. You can do seminars. You can do direct mail, whatever you want to do. But you don't want your product quality to suffer if you don't have the bandwidth to provide superior customer service to the leads you generate. So market with caution, because in this business, all we have as assets are reputation, and people share negative experiences much more than positive experiences. So if you market up and then someone reaches out and you don't return their call, or it says, I can meet with you in 3 weeks, how does that make you look?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. I know from the brokers that we work with now and help them, where it's a constant awareness and a constant discussion about what is the volume that the broker wants to have. And so what's the right amount of effort and input, if this was a factory, to produce the outputs that can be managed and handled appropriately, right? Like you're saying, you know, I know there's companies out there, it's like, hey, you could pay them, they'll send 10,000 emails, 10,000 cold emails a month. And it's like, A, do you want that reputation in the marketplace? And B, if that does work, can you handle any small percentage of responses that come? And then what happens when you get busy with listings, right? I don't know, you know, how many times you've seen that where somebody just ends up with too much work. And then, like you said, the quality of the service falters. And of course, you know, that's what people will share online more than anything.
Well, and that's where I teach my team an abundance mentality, where it's okay to say, turn off the spigot of leads right now to focus at the task at hand. And with 18 brokers out in the field, that is going to occur with different people at different time. And recognize when your spigot is off, someone's on. And then when theirs is off, yours is on. And in a global outlook, you're going to be fine. So, you know, trust that a positive future will occur, that the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. So like you said, so recapping number one, so ramping up the marketing, it's easy to do. Just be careful, build the infrastructure, and then plan for ensuring a quality service. What would be number two on your growth tip?
Every business owner considers their company their baby. So it doesn't matter if it's a drive-through espresso stand or a large technology or manufacturing company. To them, this is often their life work. And they've put their heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears into building that company. So providing superior customer service, listening more than you talk, the old adage of, you have two ears and one mouth, listen twice as much as you talk, I think it's really important in business brokerage, is make your customer feel important when you are engaged with them. It may be a very basic sales premise, but don't be looking at texts on your phone in a meeting with a business owner who's thinking about you to hire as a business broker to sell their life work, their passion for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think, you know, I've shared this with your group many times to help them sharpen their sword as just a reminder that, you know, as humans, we all think we're the center of the universe and we're the most important person and we're the hero of the story. The challenge is that salespeople think they're the ultimate hero because they're there to save the day or to do something transactionally. But like you said, that business owner who created something or bought something and made it into what it is, it's their baby. It's everything they put it into. And they need to feel like the star of the show and the hero. So I think that's great reminder. And I know that either if somebody gets distracted or they get busy with transactions, they're not responsive in the way that, you know, somebody might expect. You just always have to remember from that other side. What would be number three on your list?
And I would say, ending that, yeah, people tend to understand if you send them an email or a text and just say, I'm in a meeting currently, can I call you first thing tomorrow? Usually people are reasonable and understand you have a life too, or I'm at a parent-teacher conference this afternoon, can I call you tomorrow? They probably can say, I've been there myself, and be right. Fine. It doesn't have to address the whole situation, but make them feel valued. So continuing to the next item is, and this is what my mother taught me growing up, is, if you deliver quality, money will follow. You are being, as a business broker, hired as a trusted guide. Your client doesn't know what they don't know. For example, the debt service coverage conversation we had earlier. I would guess 90% plus of sellers don't understand the lending process that a buyer will go through to buy their business. So educate.
Yeah.
Provide resources. If your seller, they're not seeking the financing, but say, would you like to talk to the banker who's financing this acquisition? They probably have some questions about your business for underwriting, and you may have questions on timing or why do you need this piece of information? Transparency, open and honest communication, to me, is the foundation to a successful deal. There's enough risk in entrepreneurship without unknowns. I believe both the buyer and seller should go in the transaction in an environment of full disclosure and full sunlight. Let's know that the tread on these tires, on the vehicle you're buying, they're fine for summer, but when rain comes in the fall or snow, you're going to need to replace it. Doesn't mean you can't sell that vehicle, but shouldn't you know that? Shouldn't you even want the buyer to know that when they say, I'm buying this used vehicle to take my kids to school in the morning because we just had our third child and we need our first minivan. I, as a parent, as a human who cares, wouldn't want to set anyone up for failure in any situation. As I said, there's a lot of risks in entrepreneurship. As long as the buyer knows the risks,
yeah,
I believe as a broker, I've done my job.
Yeah. And what comes to mind when I think of that, as far as focusing on the quality, is also understanding that as a sales professional, anything that you are selling has trade-offs. Nothing is perfect, right? Like that triangle of good, fast, and cheap. You can only get two out of three, but never all three. Is there some trade-offs, right? Thinking of your minivan example, the price might be right. You might need to get some winter tires, right? If it had winter tires or tires that were going to perfect, then the price is going to be higher. And so there's always some trade-off, right? It's either going to be expensive or there's something else. And so understanding that it's okay to disclose whatever needs to be disclosed. And that's also quality, because nothing is going to be perfect, but it's that you've basically looked around those corners and you're willing to disclose it with transparency.
And people make decisions all the time. I have a 20-year-old daughter and a 22-year-old son who recently got new iPhones. And they made different memory decisions, which impacted the price point. I was in pain. I'm blessed that they're at a point where they could buy them, but it was just interesting listening to the decision process that they came to two different conclusions. Like you said, it was attributes versus price. My daughter chose the cheaper phone with less memory. My son, who uses the camera more to post online, wanted more capacity to store.
Good. And then you pay for that, right? And that's the trade-offs. It's all about trade-offs.
Exactly. And so that's where I just think, emphasize on doing the best job you can for your client, for the transaction in general. And don't be afraid to show a defect. It actually is good. I always tell my sell-side clients, it's good to share everything, because if they buy it knowing the fact that 30% of your revenue comes from one customer, you don't see that customer going anywhere else. Well, then if they buy it and they lose that customer, because maybe that customer goes in bankruptcy. I mean, there were businesses that made a lot of money selling products to Sears and Kmart. They're not doing it today. They went in with open eyes. You can sleep and you're not going to face a lawsuit because you didn't tell them Kmart is on the ropes and we sell a lot of product to Kmart.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everyone knows there's a downside for things, or they're always worried about that gotcha, that hidden thing. So the more you disclose and the honesty about the pros and cons of something, then people can see it and they don't feel like anything else is hidden. So I think that's great. I love that. Focus on the quality. The money will follow. How about number four? Do you have a fourth one?
This is the overarching concept at IBA, which is the golden rule. You do unto others as you want them to do unto you. So, and I convey it to both the buyer and seller. Walk to the other side of the table. Look at the transaction from their side. If you were in their shoes, would you agree to that term? And it seems very simple, but I do not think enough people do it well. I think we are self-centered. I'm in it for myself. And that's not always true. I've known women who have a party on the weekend, will go to Nordstrom's and buy a brand new set of shoes and wear them to the party, and then we'll bring them back to Nordstrom because they have a liberal return policy. This bothers me. Well, that shoe now goes to the rack. It can't go back on the shelf as a new product. Is that party truly thinking about Nordstrom and their business model and ability to carry inventory? Of course, they have a liberal return policy, but the intent wasn't for you for free to use shoes to go to a party. That's not why that policy was established. You are working an angle without thinking about all vested parties.
Yeah. Yep. And I appreciate that. I think that's what's always made me successful in sales, is seeing it from the other side and advising buyers that I'm selling to, or telling them not to buy something that we might be talking about, because I don't think it's going to be the right fit. And, you know, the sale starts at one place, but it never stops, right? The sale just continues long term. And yes, in your business, you're helping a buyer, a seller, and a buyer is buying that business, and technically you're done. But like you said earlier, can you sleep at night? Did you do the right thing? Is it the right transaction that you stand behind?
And we have a litigious society, and people often don't look in the mirror and say, "I failed." It's human nature to try to point fingers and say, "This is why I failed. It must have been you."
Must have been you, right? Must have been the bad cup designed for the coffee cup, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else? All right. How about number five? You have one more for the audience?
Well, my first career, I was a college basketball coach, and this is something I always believed in athletics, which I extended to IBA and life, is never let effort be the variable for failure. It's, you know, when someone else is going to the beach, are you working on your jump shot in the gym? Well, in the summer, no one's seen you in the gym taking 100,000 shots. They will see you next season. But if you don't make the effort, you're probably not going to be as successful next season. But you've got to show up. You've got to make the effort. It's when we talked about business valuation, you've got to look at competition. If it's a gas station on an exit on a highway, and there's no other gas station at that exit for another 10 miles east or west, that's one business. If you're in downtown Memphis, you probably have many choices of gas stations. So those are different variables. And so what are you doing to outwork the downtown Memphis gas station? May also sell wonderful fried chicken. And they give people a reason to stop there and get a to-go order beyond the fuel, which is just a commodity.
Right. Yeah. I love it. So outwork your competition. And then the subtext is don't be tan and useless. Is that?
Yes.
That's the, so I love that.
The old grasshopper and the ant story. I mean, it's just, you know, don't let effort be the reason for your failure. It's always easy to procrastinate. It's always easy to do what you enjoy as projects. We all tend to prioritize the fun, rewarding stuff.
Yeah.
But don't ignore everything you need to do. And sometimes it's best to address the hard stuff first.
It is. Eat that frog first. And then also, like they say, you know, just focus on chopping wood and carrying water. Just do it. Just do the work, put in the effort, chop wood, carry water, and that's it, right? Okay. I love all of those tips. We'll have those in the show notes for anyone watching or listening to this so that you can find those if you didn't write them down. I love all of those. I took a lot of notes on this as well. So let's move into the next segment here, Gregory, which is the one that got away, the lessons from the lost deal. Every broker has one. I love it when people share because there's a lot of lessons. You've seen a ton of transactions, yours and other brokers, over 30 plus years. So I don't even know how you narrow it down. You know, maybe it's just a trend that you see. But you know, what would be that example? What's that the deal that got away? What's the story from it, and then the lesson that's, you know, something that could help other brokers again move away from used car sales status and kind of get better at what they do.
Jason, may I share two brief stories?
Go for it.
Okay, so I'll share two, and at some level, they have a common theme. So the first one is, and this gets back to selecting your customer. Do you trust them? Can you work with them? If you identify something down the line that doesn't smell right, remember your reputation's on the line. I was selling a restaurant in Seattle many years ago, and I identified that the accounting was dishonest for the business. I didn't identify it when I evaluated it, but as we got into due diligence with a deal in escrow pending sale, the numbers didn't line up. And with my experience, I was seeing things that the buyer wasn't. And I was uncomfortable being part of that transaction. So I went to my client and said, I don't want to be party to this. I'm going to walk away and void our agreement. You can still sell to this buyer if you want. I'm not going to sabotage your deal, but I am withdrawing as your representative.
Interesting.
The buyer observed it. I communicated that I have decided I am not going to continue to work on this project. You have my blessing to buy it. There's no liability to IBA. The buyer actually completed the transaction and failed with the business model. And I ran into them at a later date, and they made a point at another restaurant to come over and talk to me. And they said, I really respect you because you walked away from getting paid. You knew I was mentally and emotionally committed to this. It wasn't if you were going to get paid, but when. But I didn't read the tea leaves and ask, why is this broker walking away from a commitment? It's not a logical thing that you see every day.
No.
And he just praised me. He said, you know, in today's world, there aren't many people with that amount of integrity who would sacrifice dollars to do the right thing. So my recommendation to people is you only get one reputation, and there can be a short-term economic gain. But if you want to do this business long-term, protect your reputation like gold, because once it's tarnished, once you start getting bad Google reviews, et cetera, it's really hard to change it back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's so true, right? You just get one chance at that. And what's interesting is to think of, 30 plus years ago when you started, the internet wasn't a thing like it is now. And so if somebody in business or sales has a bad reputation or does bad things, they can easily hide that, right? There isn't an ability to check and see what others are experiencing. Now you can't hide it. You can't hide from that. You can't run from that. It will get online and it will be fast. And like they say, it's like getting pee out of a swimming pool. You're not undoing that once it gets out there. Like, it's just something that's just always there. And so I think that's important. I think it's fascinating to think of what that takes to do that right thing. And then for the buyer to still go through with the transaction because they were so emotionally committed to it. So I think that's very valuable. What you said you had two. What's the other one?
The other is a characteristic and old as time, which is greed. And IBA has faced this. I just had a situation with six offers. One of my brokers, Andrea Lines, who specializes in the education space, had, I believe, seven offers with a likelihood of 10 for a client. Kate, another broker, has numerous offers on a manufacturing company in the technology space. Just because you do a good job as a salesman doesn't mean the valuation of the business changes. And you can see greed, where a seller tries to move the goalposts on the broker and on the buyer to a different level. Now, market conditions can move the goalposts on their own, and a good professional intermediary will play that hand and may be able to get a premium. Andrea, the same broker I referenced, she sold another education company for a $500,000 premium in a 10-offer situation previously. Well, those buyers in pursuit of a goal, no different than a unique Waterview waterfront property that there's one of a kind, people will pay a premium, but it's by their own motivation. To me, it's a positive price adjustment based on market conditions versus, well, if they offered X, see if you can get them to X plus two, even though we were on the market at X and we all agreed it was a fair price when we went to market. And in fact, we saw it as a high end of a range of 10%. It could sell between X and Y, and the broker did their job and got you the high end of the range. That doesn't mean the range changes. Even getting back to what we talked about, I think, several times previously, the debt service coverage, you still got to get it finance or the investment dollars. So that can be achieved perhaps with more capital injection by the buyer, the seller carrying a note. There are ways to do it, but you still need to stay on the playing field.
Yeah, makes sense. And I appreciate that perspective, right? There's a difference between somebody wanting to pay a premium versus playing the game of, pitting people against each other in order to have a bidding war because you're just trying to squeeze more money out of something that, you know, might ultimately be then difficult to close the transaction or might leave someone getting something that's going to be really difficult as a business.
Well, I love both of those situations. Yeah. And I'll close with this is on that six offer situation on a manufacturing company. At the end of the day, my client did not accept the highest value offer. It actually was $200,000 less than the highest offer on this multiple million dollar business. They ended up picking the buyer they thought was best for their employees, their customers, their vendors, because those were important issues when they exited from the business. But having higher offers allowed us to move the preferred buyer financially and on other terms. So we left some meat on the bone, but we achieved some secondary and tertiary negotiation elements from our preferred buyer that we wouldn't have achieved without the leverage of the other buyer. And that's where experience, knowledge, skill matter. Business sales is not about price. You're not just buying a diamond ring where many jewelers have the exact same or similar diamond ring, and it's a commodity price decision. This is a one-of-a-kind entity and a life work, often of the seller, and honestly, fulfillment of a dream or an aspiration by the buyer to acquire that company. I mean, this has the opportunity to be a magical exchange, because one party is exiting stage right and the other is just excited to take the stage and be the lead performer in this story.
Yeah. I love it. I think that's a great perspective. That's what makes your business of intermediary and business brokers so fascinating and challenging, is that it's not just price. It's not a commodity. It's not a one size fits all. It's not, you know, look in the catalog and see, you know, what did the last Corvette sell for? Okay, wait, this is what we should sell ours for. You know, it's much different. I think that's great. To close out episode number one, you being here, if you had to give brokers just one piece of advice, especially for winning more listings for growing that part of their business, right? The sales pipeline side, what would it be?
Great question. I would say, first of all, this is a wonderful profession that's needed with the baby boomers retiring. So the first thing is, it's a robust garden of opportunity. So if you're picking this profession, there is opportunity. And I would say, play the long game, build a network of collaborative referral partners, attorneys, CPAs, wealth advisors, real estate brokers. Become part of the community. To quote Sesame Street, be the business broker in your neighborhood that everyone calls, and be willing to just be a resource. Let someone call you and ask you a question. Be the giver, because you will get the gains.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I think that's important for any business. I think that's important for anyone in sales, is to play the long game. And what you're talking about, it's definitely important, because it's quality over quantity of the relationships, but also the transactions. This isn't about selling, you know, 100 widgets a month. It's about a certain number per year. So I think that's great. And I know that for you, it's huge, right? The relationships, the referral partners, the community involvement, the entrepreneurship involvement. So I appreciate that. For our audience, for anyone tuning in, they want to get in touch with you. They want to read more. I know that they can find you on LinkedIn. So you post regularly there. So it's Gregory Kovsky. All of this will be in the show notes if you want to find it. Anyone who's tuning in, it's Kovsky. You can also go to ibainc.com, and you can email Gregory at ibainc.com He has a very active blog on there that I know, Gregory, you write for, the team writes for. You've had guests like myself. You have other people write anything to help business brokers, but also, you know, the industry, entrepreneurship, business owners in general. You're always putting stuff out there. So make sure if you're interested, follow what Gregory's doing and reach out to him. Again, I know he's always willing to be a resource, always loves talking business, sales, anything like that. Gregory, thank you for being here, moving up from, you know, episode 325 on my previous show to episode number one, guest number one on the Business Broker Growth Show. I appreciate you being here and sharing all this info with us today.
Thank you, Jason. You're an asset to the sales community.
Oh, I appreciate that. And super excited for this show, for this podcast, and having this come together. Like I said in the beginning, it was all spurred on as the catalyst from Gregory and my interactions with him and his team, and seeing the business and seeing, you know, such an amazing environment, and then the pass through, which is helping businesses succeed in exiting. And that's what we focus on here at Business Broker Growth, is working with brokers, to Gregory's point, to separate the professionals and help them succeed, and hopefully reduce and or remove the used car sales mode, which then just leaves business owners in a bad place. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Make sure to follow this wherever you found it. There's also a YouTube channel. There's a LinkedIn page. There's a website. All of that will be in the show notes. Just Google Business Broker Growth and you'll find it. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.